Hey, we are back with another episode of Dialogue Heavy with yours truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. What's up, guys? We are continuing on this saga of God Bless the Girls, our story of the young lady who got locked in the basement. Not locked in the basement, but, you know, abducted and locked into a dark basement. The last couple chapters, 13, 14, and 15, were... If you don't remember, if you weren't listening to it right before then, Boston tells her story about being how she got abducted and being inside of the sorority house and how she got abducted. Then we move on to Gore actually attempting to feed the girls, and Sarah, our main character, getting in a fight with them and coincidentally fucking up everybody else's meal because Gore takes all their food away from them. And, you know, they're stuck down there fucking starving and stuff. And after that, we have the situation where they kind of figure out when, you know, Sarah gets in her fit of, you know, yelling and talking crap to Gore and them going back and forth, that Sarah is a virgin and she's been protecting this secret for a while. And the next couple of chapters, we'll have a little bit of a story about that. But yeah, she also, in those previous chapters, kind of gives her little reckoning and her thought process on serial killers, rapists, abductors, and people like that, and why they do what they do, and how a lot of it stems from childhood and being abused themselves. Hurt people, as they say. And also, the apple doesn't fall very far from the tree. And she had her own explanation about how she's a runner and stuff like that. And she didn't realize that her father and her grandfather and even great-grandfather were runners. And she correlated that with how serial killers do what they do. I don't know how true that is. I just wrote the situation. But anyway, we are going to get into it. I got another 3 chapters, I believe, for you today. 16, 17, and 18. And we're going to see what's going on with these girls, man. Sarah, our main character, is pushing the limits, and she's trying to figure out, you know, a part of it is just her being so goddamn furious with being down there. And she has an anger. I wouldn't call it an issue. Who wouldn't be angry if they're locked into a dark dungeon, not knowing what the hell is going on, and then the threat of your counterparts inside of there being raped and stuff like that. So it's a pretty harsh, disgusting thing, but we're going to continue with the story, man. So, without further ado, I bring to you God Bless the Girls, chapter 16, 17, and 18. And like we always said on here, as far as everything that's been on this podcast, Dialogue Heavy, that's been written or recited to this point today, it's all recited by Michael and written by Michael Anthony McMillan. Here we go. Chapter 16. That was a bit dramatic, I thought. Is that true? Terry said, with all the previous venom taken out of her voice. What? Virgin? No, I said. Yep, Susie chimed in. She's definitely a virgin. Shut up, Susie! Why does it even matter if I am? You guys aren't. And I'm pretty fucking sure what happens up there is... I don't fucking know, but it ain't good. All right, guys. Everybody calm down. Sarah's right. It doesn't matter if she's a virgin or not. The more important subject is, as Terry continued with her speech about connecting the dots and getting us out of that basement, something occurred to me. You know, the whole virgin fiasco with me wasn't even supposed to be like that. I had no problem with sex, with the thought of it, at least. Shit, I wanted to do it more than I let anybody to know, but I just had a mental block about it. And the catalyst would be a dildo and a Bible. See, my mom and I were always extremely close. She had no sisters and had me young, so to her, I was her daughter, but also kind of like a baby sister she never had. Now, that usually is a recipe for disaster, but it wasn't for us. We were thick as thieves until the day I went into her bedroom and I lost a little piece of myself. I was 8 at the time, so whenever I was bored, which was most of the time, I went to my mother and father's room to rummage through all their things. and her makeup drawer was no exception. After I made myself up and felt like the prettiest little girl in the world, I went through her clothes to play dress up. I had done this plenty of times in my short life, and I never before got in trouble for raccooning my way through her valuables. That day, though, for whatever reason, I went through my mother's panty drawer, and I saw things I never saw before. I saw panties that looked like shoestrings, and I even saw a black bra that had the nipple area cut out. Weird, but in all honesty, that didn't even spook me. I had no basis for comparisons. I just thought it was funny that my mom had holes in her undergarments. At the very bottom of the drawer, though, I felt something that felt similar to one of my own toys. I remember thinking then that I had caught my mom trying to hide yet another surprise toy from me. Was it a birthday gift? I don't know, but it felt squishy. It was long and tube-like and even bendable. If it was a surprise, it didn't feel like a very good one. But one thing was for sure, I wasn't leaving that room without taking a peek at it. Then, boom. When I pulled it out, I was horrified. I had only seen something like that before on two occasions. Once on accident, walking into the bathroom on my father when he was drying himself off after a shower, and the other time, a disgusting little boy showed me his in the bushes in preschool. Before I can even accurately take in what I was seeing, my mother ran into the room. I hadn't even realized I had been screaming at the top of my lungs for about 10 seconds. My mother shrieked when she saw what I found, which startled me even more. She snatched the dildo away from me and ran me out of their room so fast that we were halfway down the hallway en route to my room before I heard the heavy thud of it hitting the wooden floors. That afternoon, my mother did her best to erase the memory of me seeing my first rubber penis. But I think, in all honesty, a little white lie about the whole thing would have sufficed. Parents do this all the time. They have a tendency to over-explain life's harder subjects, and my mother was no different. Instead, she pulled out the Bible and read me all these stories about infidelity and Sodom and Gomorrah. She went on and on about how sex was a sin when you're not married, and even how sex with certain people could kill you. It was horrible. And I was terrified. She could have made me a nun. If she was attempting to make sure she wasn't going to be a grandmother at the age of 32, she did her job, because by the end of that afternoon, I wanted nothing to do with boys, and I was absolutely terrified of penises. Later in life, as I grew into my own nature, I would be torn because I loved everything about boys. I loved their ability to run fast and play sports. I loved how they can get dirty and ruin a new outfit without getting chastised over it. And most important, I loved how they weren't catty with each other like girls. If they had a disagreement, they either figured it out with words or fists, but either way, they always seemed to be back playing again in seconds. Looks-wise, I loved it all. Long wavy hair or short buzz cuts. In fact, the only preferences I had is that they needed to be tall. My first crush, David, from elementary school had been shorter than me, but after he broke my heart in the love triangle that included him, myself, and a girl named Michelle, plus a caramel apple sucker, I was done with short boys. But as I said before, for every boy I liked, I had a secret crush on, somewhere behind it, deep down inside, there was a sense of guilt and shame. And it all stemmed from my mother and that day. Every relationship I had ended bad because of something physical, or lack thereof. In middle school, it was no big deal because the boys had no idea what they were doing, and most of them were more scared to touch me than I was them. But in high school, when that piss and vinegar and testosterone kicked in, that's when I started to have real problems. One of my first truly great boyfriends was named Bernie. He wasn't as tall as I would have liked, but he made up for that by being my high school star soccer player. He was always so nice and so accommodating. He opened doors for me, and he even tried to carry my book bag to every class, coincidentally making him late for all of his. One day we were making out in his car, and he wanted to take the next step. I had already given him every excuse in the book, and he'd never given me any pushback, but that day, he'd had enough. Bernie, I said as I pulled his hands out of my pants for the 10th time.
What, babe?
He said, kissing my neck.
We can't.
What? He said, pulling back from me, frustrated. You promised!
I know.
What the fuck, Sarah? Excuse me? I said, what the fuck? We've been going out for like 36 days. I brought the condoms. I got the blanket in the back. What's wrong?
I don't know.
You know I won't hurt you, right? Bernie said before he started kissing my neck again. At that point, I probably wanted him more than he wanted me. But again, guilt, shame, pregnancy, and the thought of disease came bubbling back to the surface in a flash of my mother's face, and a purple dildo was the only thing that I could see. All of that pushed my desire for him way away.
I know, Bernie, but I'm just not ready.
Bernie's face was one of a kid that just realized there was no Santa Claus, or Christmas for that matter. Bernie knew he wasn't getting his gift that day, and probably ever. Long story short, the next week he was going out with Diana, the 4'8" exchange student from China, and I had to watch him carry her book bag to class every day for the rest of that semester. Chapter 17. Gore had returned to the house and was walking around upstairs with the other two, and I didn't know if he had told them about knowing his name, and they were getting ready to come down and take care of us. Or what? They didn't know that even if I did know his name, I couldn't pick him out of a lineup if my life depended on it. In fact, I only remembered a nickname because it was so peculiar. I heard the broom closet open and the keys being taken out. My heart started to race like it does when the gun goes off at the beginning of a race, and it went even faster when the basement door swung open and the lights filed down the stairs. The first two lights went straight for Susie like it was premeditated, but Gore came straight at me. At that point, it was so loud with all the girls screaming and kicking and the chains clinking against the floor that I wasn't even sure what was going on. Gore was at my ankles trying to tame my legs, and I was giving him a hell of a time flailing and kicking with everything I had. He had his key in my ankle cuff ready to snatch me and take me upstairs, but the tall, lanky man ran over and grabbed him.
I said no,
he said. Gore gripped my ankle as the other man tugged at him. He hit him, but Gore was like a pit bull and wouldn't let go.
God damn it, the lanky man strained. Get the fuck off.
He pulled and pulled, but Gore's grip strength was too much for him. The whole basement was in disarray, with lights cutting through the darkness, leaving only us to see flashes of people's faces and body parts and snapshots. Then the lady must have got tired of everyone's bullshit, because not too much after the scuffle and yelling began, she walked over to Gore and gave him a smack that echoed through the whole basement, leaving everybody in complete silence. Have you ever heard the token of somebody saying, "I'll smack the sense into you"? Well, I think she did, because after that slap from hell, both men fell back in line. Gore dropped my chain while the lady and the lanky guy sprayed Susie unconscious and took her upstairs. I, on the other hand, was still hyperventilating from the fight with Gore and was pissed, to say the least.
You fucking coward!
I yelled as Gore stood up calmly and started walking up the stairs.
You better run! You better pray I don't get out of here, motherfucker!
Gore reached the top of the stairs and stopped. As he slowly turned back to face me, his shadow towered over us, darkening the light way that came from the kitchen.
Yeah, I'm talking to you, asshole! You won't be able to do this shit forever, and when I get out of here, I'm gonna find you and I'm gonna seriously fuck you up!
Gore just stared at me. Was he analyzing me? Was he studying my rage and my ability to express myself without worrying about the consequences? Because I was worried about it. I was just putting on a brave front because you have to. Shit, I was even starting to retract my bold statements in my head. The intensity and anger on my face remained, but I was becoming scared on the inside, and maybe he knew because he slowly tilted his head to one side, just like crazy serial killers do in your favorite scary movies, and suddenly he spoke in a tone I'd never heard before. I'll be waiting for you. I was terrified. What the fuck was that? I'd never heard that voice come out of his mouth before. It was one that was proper. It was light, and the enunciation of each word was clear and concise. That was definitely not the dumb hick voice that he had told that told me to shut up when I arrived. If he were playing a game of chess, if we were playing a game of chess, he'd won that battle, because I was completely perplexed. And when he got his satisfaction via my facial expression, he exited and slammed the door behind him. Wait, I thought. What the fuck just happened? That was Gore, right? The buff guy from the party. It had to be. I know I'm not crazy. The shoes, the wrestling tattoo. Did you guys hear that shit? I said. Shit, Terry said. I think we're in deeper than we thought. That was some Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde shit. I never heard that voice before, said Boston. This guy is fucking with my head, right? I thought. First he grunts instead of talking like he's an idiotic mute. Then he transitioned to singing lullabies. Now he's an English fucking scholar. This guy's either bipolar or a paranoid schizophrenic. Maybe both. Motherfucker! I screamed. And when I yanked at my chain for the millionth time since being down there, a gift and a curse happened. It was open. Chapter 18. Shit! I said. My chain was no longer hooked to the floor. Gore had actually unhooked me during our scuffle. Did he do it on purpose? Or in his rage to get me, did he have a loss of consciousness? I'll be waiting for you. Shit. He could be up there waiting for me. Right next to the door, ready to whack me in the head. But I had to get out, right? I had to go find out. I was both excited and terrified to be free, but I had to think about this. If I got up there and had the fight, I'd have to put Gore to sleep first. Even with a blood choke, a choke that cuts off circulation to the brain, rendering you to fall asleep, that takes anywhere from 6 to 9 seconds, depending on your technique and squeeze power. In that time, the chick and the lanky guy could gang up on me and pull me off. Even worse than that was the fact that Gore could use one of his all-American wrestling moves on me and completely obliterate me if he knew what the hell he was doing. Nah, I can't leave just yet. I would have to bide my time. I listened as they did to Susie what happened to Terry earlier. They shackled her up in the far room, had a few drinks in the kitchen, and then when they were loose, they turned on the music. Motherfuckers! Terry screamed. When I get out of here, I'm going to make it my life's purpose to kill every last one of those bitches. Yeah, I said, me too. I thumbed around the end of my chain, trying not to make any unnecessary noise, and thought to myself, I really was between a rock and a hard place. They would be done with Susie soon, and they would have to bring her back down. What if they saw my chain was unlocked? And if Boston was right about Gore not doing any of the physical stuff and I went upstairs, he could be sitting in the living room. I also couldn't tell the girls that I was free. I felt confident I can tell Terry and maybe even Susie, but Boston might open her mouth in hopes of saving herself. Shit, I thought. I would have to stay. Maybe until nightfall. And I ain't even know when that was. Should I just sit on my chain when they came back down with Susie in hopes that they didn't see? I was free. Sorry, guys. Should I just sit on my chain when they came back with Susie in hopes that they didn't see that I was free and wait until they all left to another wrestling match? Fuck. The fuck am I gonna do now? And that's it. Guys, another set of chapters for God Bless the Girls. This is a crazy one, no? So now we see that Gore, whether we know it, we don't know or not, if Gore, if he unlocked Sarah on purpose, or if he, you know, with him saying that thing he said when he left upstairs, if he was like just daring her to leave, like, you got your freedom, you talking all this shit, I dare for you to come up here and try to escape. Then he would be able to, you know, exact his revenge on her or whatever. They are playing like some mental chess games with each other, you know, him obviously having the upper hand with her being down there. But it's an interesting tale. And she can't tell the girls. It's kind of hard for her to tell the girls that she's out, because they don't know, one, if Boston is going to do, you know, what Boston does. She did that thing that one time that helped the lady stay from the girls escaping. And so she can't tell her. And obviously, being in that small room, she can't tell Terry without her. And obviously, Susie is upstairs, you know, having not the funnest time. But I'm enjoying telling you guys this. And for all you guys that have been listening regularly, sorry for missing a week. Crazy scheduling and stuff at my gig. But I'm going to try to make sure I consistently do this every Friday morning for you guys, so you guys have something to listen to on your way to work, gym, all that good stuff. I'm just happy that you guys are doing it, man. I really appreciate you guys being there and listening to this stuff. The questions that have been asked by people, I should start reading the questions on here, but the questions that have been asked about people, about the girls and their specific backgrounds, or how these people are going to escape, and people trying to guess how they're going to escape, or if they are going to escape, if somebody's going to get killed, if somebody's going to have to be sacrificed or something like that. It definitely does seem like it, doesn't it? Never know. But we're going to go through it all together, and I can't relinquish anything because I want to kind of go through it while I'm going with you guys. So anyway, like I said, I appreciate you guys for listening. I'm enjoying talking about it and reading this stuff, this material to you, and we're getting there, man. We're getting there. It looks like we're almost about halfway done, a little less than halfway done, and I'm still writing this too. As if you didn't know, I'm still writing this as I go. So we're halfway through what I've already written, and I'm adding more every throughout the week when I'm not preparing to read this. As bad as it sounds, I do prepare before I actually read it. But when I'm not preparing for the next week's reading, I'm still writing at the ending of this. And it's so crazy when you write stuff. You think, as a writer, you think all this stuff is your own and it's your baby. But the universe has a way of, like, pumping stuff through us as artists or whatever, because let's say these chapters right here, these chapters could have been done in November. So as I continue on my path to continue to write the story, all of this stuff is like way in the background now. I'm focusing on what's happening at the ending and stuff, and you kind of forget about these things. So when I go back to prepare for you guys and read these out, sometimes I'm surprised at myself. Sometimes, you know, it's one of those things as a writer. Sometimes you think your stuff is the best shit ever written, and sometimes you think it's fucking crap. That's why I spend so much time throughout the week editing and stuff like that, and trying to make something that makes any sense to you guys by the time you listen to it. But it's a process, and I'm a green writer. I will 100% admit that I'm a green writer and stuff. No real writer would even recite anything that's in their, you know, first draft anyway, but I digress. So anyway, thanks for listening. You guys, I appreciate you, as you know. And we'll continue on with this, man. Hope you like the story. You know, you can reach me at Michael DeGrio on Instagram. My email, mzzack199@gmail.com. And that's it. That's all. I'll catch you guys next week. Thanks again. I'll let you later. Peace. I'm out of here.